this thing. No title again?
Is it rolling, Bob?
Fade Out, This Is The Day by The Not a song I'm really that familiar with. I'm sure I've heard it, but Daniel suggested this morning when I drove him to STC that I should check out some 80s stuff. And the first hit was, you know, my God, Madonna, Material Girl, and the, you know, Girls Don't Want to Have Fun, and stuff I didn't want to hear. So I went to New Wave Mix, 80s New Wave Mix, and came up with stuff like this, and it's it suits me a lot better. I've had two walks today. Once I did a long stretch at Birkdale Ravine, and now I'm across the other side of Brimley at Thompson Park, and I did a walk here too. So I got in a double walk today, which is pretty spectacular. Let me just see, just for, because I know, oh my God, I'm almost 6,000 steps already. Wow. It is a glorious day. It is Sunday, the 24th of March, almost 4 o'clock, so I got to get home soon. I got my wife's car, Nelko's car, and I've just made a point of just walking and listening to music. Somewhere in the middle there, I phoned my good friends Deb and Brent, who have been having a bit of a rough time with health issues and family health issues and stuff going on that's hard to deal with. And so I just wanted a little bit of a catch-up. Then I feel bad. Well, I don't feel bad, but people don't mind hearing that. Golly gee, I feel so good. Things are going well in my life. And Deb said, it's okay. It's good to hear somebody else who's happy and content. And it really is true that it's just, I know it is the miracle of the walking. That's a big part of it. But it's also a stage in my life. If there's a message to get out, I'd want it to be that, hey, growing old, 75, going on 76, you can still learn and enjoy and take pleasure in life and maybe even get a little better at living. In spite of all the other shit that will invariably go on, the health issues and so on, and forgetfulness and mobility, all that stuff. You can go beyond that. You can go beyond it, and I feel that's where I'm at. I know a real other blessing was finding this book at this time, this Eckhart Tolle book, Awakening to Your Life's Purpose. It just is resonating. I'm getting it. I'm reading it and understanding and buying into it, you know, and sorry, I'm on repeat here telling you what I've already told you, but it just sometimes there's a time to read a book. Somebody said, can recommend a book, and yeah, it's not time. The funny thing is, when I phoned Deb, I showed her the book, and she said, oh, hang on, I got that right here, and she was holding the very same book, and Susan Murphy, oh, I got that one years ago. So there you go. I did find another little book in the library on The Way of Nagomi. And it was a bit of fluff, but it was interesting. There's a lot of just explaining Japanese culture and why it works. And The Way of Nagomi, Nagomi meaning it's kind of about trying to find life's balance, not going to the extreme, sort of almost a middle way. And it really did make sense. I mean, it went beyond that. It was trying to find perfection, really. In the way you serve up food, by balancing it, balancing the colors, the maybe the textures, even the seasons. There's just taking a deeper look at life, which certainly is a Japanese way. I'll read out a little passage. The Way of Nagomi, the Japanese philosophy of finding balance and peace in everything you do, and that's by somebody called Ken Mogi, who also wrote Awaking Your Ikigai, and I think I read that recently too. Talking about religion in Japan, and this would be kind of an expression of how Japanese people have dealt with it. I mean, they stomped on Christianity early. They didn't want it to be the whole country taken over and their whole way of life changed. So it was pretty brutal, the suppression. But now, modern Japan, it is customary for a Japanese person to have a Christian-style wedding, go to a Shinto shrine on New Year's Day for a ritual called Hatsumode, the first visit to the shrine of the year for many, and for many, sometimes the only visit, and have a Buddhist funeral. A Christian wedding is considered to be more romantic. A visit to the Shinto shrine on New Year's Day resonates with the feeling of starting afresh with a blank page in your life. And the celebrity, can't be celebrity of a funeral, the, you know, let's substitute seriousness or whatever, of a funeral is best expressed in the traditional Buddhist manner. So there you go, how they can, Japanese people can be flexible. And when I read the book, it really did bring back a lot of my time living there and what I learned, and I guess the difference in outlook on life, what I just said, the seriousness with which people approach life, the consideration for so many things, much more of a consideration for people, for feelings, for doing things the right way. I remember, you know, an early lesson was just when we were going to have a meeting with another company or officials, and how important it was to decide who sat where. And of course, they would have to have the best view, and the important person in the middle, you know, place of honor. And just things like that were just, you know, my goodness, everybody would know that, except the foreigner who would have to be taught. But lots of little things like that. But I'm not going to spend too much time. Now, this is just an opening to Dixon Jane's number 990. There were several times I took out this mic, the recorder, on the walks, maybe three times, and each time put it away. It wasn't the right time. And I'm not sure that now is, or that even if there is a right time. But I kind of felt it's, well, I just wanted to get started. I don't have a whole lot of notes. I do have a lot of thinking going on, but thinking is, you know, it's a difficult thing to share sometimes. Something from the book that I like, I guess why the book is important to me now, is that my ego rules my life, and I'm very much involved in the section on ego. Basically, how that is not who you are at all, the true essence of yourself. And it is this construct, this mental construct of based on our past, our histories, and it's, we live by it, we're ruled by it, but a true awakening is recognizing that that is not me, that is not my essence, that is not the truth. That's this thing somehow that gets built to survive. And there's a lot of time spent on explaining the ego, how it wants to survive, it wants to have power, and it'll do things like criticize other people, and that way it makes you feel better about yourself and stronger, and all these things that he just does a wonderful job of explaining. But here, sort of towards the end of that section, the moment you become aware of the ego, it is, strictly speaking, no longer the ego, but just an old, common, conditioned mind pattern. Ego implies unawareness. Awareness and ego cannot coexist. So a true awakening means recognizing that chatter in your head, that noise, the comparison, the feeling bad, the feeling up, the feeling better, the feeling worse. All these things are illusions and constructs, but it is not the truth. And so I'm trying to fit that in with, you know, the stories I tell about my past life. You know, who is Ken? He is this person who lived in Japan, who, you know, married this person. All those things are true. But you don't want to be trapped by them. You're trying to, if you want to awaken. And of course, here's the funny part. You know, Ken, what are you talking about? Do you really think you're going to awaken? You really think you have it in you? And yes, I do. It is in me and it is in you. I think the ego is the thing that separates us. And we build this thing up to, I guess, to protect ourselves, to wrap us off, to give us this sense of identity. And it feeds itself by, you know, putting you in relationships where you compare yourself to somebody else. Am I better than that person? Are they better in this thing? What did that person do to piss me off? It's just, I can't sum it up because, you know, everything in it, it just makes sense, say, the whole damn book. The underlying emotion that governs all the activity of the ego is fear. The fear of being nobody, the fear of non-existence, the fear of death. All its activities are ultimately designed to eliminate this fear, but the most the ego can ever do is cover it up temporarily with an intimate relationship, a new possession, or winning at this or that. Illusion will never satisfy you. Only the truth of who you are, if realized, will set you free. And that's just, I mean, again, it's a random passage. The ego always wants something from other people or situations. There's always a hidden agenda, always a sense of not enough yet, of insufficiency and lack that needs to be filled. It uses people and situations to get what it wants. And even when it succeeds, it is never satisfied for long. And so that's the thing you want to get rid of, you know. You don't want to have to feel I'm better than him and do all this comparison that I've talked about on this show. So I am in the process of trying to awaken. Okay, I'll leave it at that. And I think I'm going to end it at that. That's 15 minutes. That's a little more normal. And get home to see what Naoko's up to and see what our plans for supper are. 10 years ago today, it just came up on one of those memories in Facebook. She had made an unbelievably delicious salmon supper, and I had a picture. So I'm kind of glad that it's posted. I don't know how that fits in. It's just, hey, 10 years ago tonight, that's what we were eating. Maybe I'll show her. She was in a fashion show yesterday wearing a kimono for something that was going on at the place where she works. All right, Scarborough Dude. feeling more like Ken than Scarborough, dude. I'm going to talk about that a little later on, too. Signing off from Thompson Park. Bye-bye. I don't have a little ding-dong. And, maybe if I reached into the back, could I? Oh, I don't think I can get to it without making a huge fuss. And you'll see, is it really worth it? And I kind of wanted to ring the bicycle bell. Oh, here it is. Hang on. And I'm ringing that bell in honor of Allison. Allison is no longer with us. That was Shane's partner. And Shane was the fellow who kindly, in a spirit of generosity and giving, sent me the bicycle bell when I was mentioned I didn't have one for the walker. So there it is in the back seat of the Mazda here. Allison left this earth. And poor dear Shane is completely lost without her presence, her being. It was a cruel, swift death thanks to that thing we call cancer that hurts us and steals from us. So that was for Allison. She I only met her a few times, I think I mentioned, but she was a wonderful spirit, and I'm picturing the smile and the laughter, and I guess that's a better way to remember her than lying in the hospital. Bye again. Thanks, Shane. Hang in there. Police in the background. That's from OK Computer. As you, all of you know, I bet you every listener to this podcast knew that. From Radiohead, the OK Computers. I should listen to that whole, I was going to say CD album. This is what you'll get. And this is what you're getting. You're getting the Scarborough Dude on a Wednesday afternoon. And it's been a nice day. It's still chilly, you know. It's what's the weather? We're getting near, you know, March 27th, getting close to April. I'm at Bluffers Park. I was sitting out on a bench by the water with Mustard Mike. I'm gonna keep calling him that. It's just easy for me to say. And those who know who I mean, and those who don't know, well, you just. I'm talking about somebody called Mustard Mike, for whatever reason. We spent, an hour and a half talking. And it's nice. He's the person I mentioned in the oversharing podcast that I said, let's be friends. Almost like I wasn't going to give him any choice. Like a mafia don saying, hey, I think we got something here. And anyway, it was interesting. I like hearing somebody else's life who's younger and still has a future ahead of them. He's doing quite well for himself. And anyway, I'm not going to mention too much more about that. It was just the kind of conversation we decided we'd have today. And next time, I said, you're coming to my house, and I'm going to show you my basement bar, because I've been talking about my plans for... once I hit episode 1000 and switch over to doing YouTube, And if I say that on this podcast, it sort of forces me into a corner like, hey, I don't have any choice now. I've said I was going to do that, so I better fucking do it. And with the idea of auctioning off all kinds of stuff that I want to get rid of, and who knows if it'll actually result in anybody buying anything, but it'll be good. At least I'll identify to my sons some of the shit I got that, you know, hey, you know, guys, is that really, you really want that to go into the garbage, or do you think somebody should have that? Okay, so let's move on back to today. I had my walk this morning already. I went to, after dropping Dan off, I went to Thompson Park and had a, you know, got in my 4,000 steps, 3 kilometers. So I'm kind of a little bit tired. There's been no time for an afternoon nap, which is good. What do you mean wrapping up that set?
Next up, a few songs that Spotify listeners around the country just seem to love. Noah Kahan first.
Yeah, all right. I'll let him have his way. That's DJ X. I always call him AI DJ, which I prefer. Yeah. All right. No, I'm not going to listen to any more music. Okay. I'm just going to stop you there. Noah Kahan and your song forever. No. Don't tell me what to fucking listen to. Because I need to clear my head. I need to clear my head. I had some things I wanted to share, some actual thoughts. And the trouble is, I rehearsed them all during my walk this morning. So, say that. And, of course, now is now. And I've forgotten exactly how to phrase what it was I wanted to get across. In fact, what's important is what's the message? What is the message? It doesn't matter how you say it, but what is the message? And the message is, I think, I'm learning more about ego and how to deal with ego and how to wrestle control of ego and the needs of ego in working towards the goal of having, well, more control over it so that it doesn't control me so much. And that sounds like a contradiction, because me, normally speaking, is the ego. But when we're talking about enlightenment and awareness, we're talking about you can't have awareness and ego at the same time. I think I already said that, and I brought that up in our men's group yesterday. Oh, yeah, there's another topic right there. Yeah, yesterday's men's group was a good one. This is the monthly meetings with a group of people aging from 60-something to 96, and wow, such a great opportunity to have good conversation, and most of which I'm obliged not to share because it's private and confidential, a group of men sitting around talking about stuff that's personal and deep, and we share, we care, we dare. It's a wonderful thing, and it's free. What a gift to have a group of people, and it's a defined group. You know, there's 15, 16 or more of us on the mailing list who get the invites to come on this Tuesday, first Tuesday of each month, at this particular place and get together. And on any given Tuesday, there might be up to 10, 11 of us, 12 maybe. And it's always wonderful. But the point is, it's real exchanges. It's real conversation. It's real talking and listening, giving and taking, not just somebody rambling on about last night's hockey game. It's people actually wanting to share what's going on in their lives at these various ages. And my gosh, the wonder of having people with much more wisdom than myself, you know, in their 80s and 90s, who, wow, they've got years on me and they've got that much more experience. And yet each of our voices count. You know, nobody is better than anybody else in that group. It's, we all have something to offer. And I know, just telling you about it doesn't give you anything. And here it is. There is a perfect example. It's my ego who's running the show right now. And my ego is actually, the message I'm actually sending is, ha ha, look what I got. I got a group I belong to. You don't. And I don't mean it that way, and I don't want it to be that way, but partly me telling that story is me building up myself. I've got something that's really good. And that's what I'm trying to get rid of. And that's not the, at all in the spirit of what the men's group is about. And it's what I'm only just now, through this book, by Eckhart Tolle, it is Tolle, Awakening to Your Life's Purpose, is about. By the way, do I have time? What time is it? 3 o'clock. Yes, I've got time to go down Kingston Road. I could shut this off and I could go and pick up my copy. Yes, of The Power of Now. So you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to shut this baby down. I'm going to go and get that book. And I'm going to come back to you. I don't know how much I gave you just there. This is about a 10-minute clip. But right now, the power of now, this power of now is giving way to this other. Oh, I just remembered. There's this other power of now I got to deal with, which is now go and get that fucking book, man, because you need it. So, yeah, signing off. I'll be back. Don't worry. I'll be back. We got lots of time. Don't worry. Hope that wasn't too loud. this is a bit funny. This me you're hearing now is coming to you less than an hour from when the previous clip was recorded. And I am back in exactly the same spot, the parking spot here at Bluffers Park. I suddenly remembered, you know, oh, that book, it's in. Yeah, I tried it because yesterday I emailed, what's her name, at the Great Escape Bookshop and said, do you have a copy of The Power of Now? And this morning I got the response, yes, it's, I'm holding it for you now. And so I just got out of here. I'm on Kingston Road. Thompson Park is, you know, right by Bluffers Park. So right by Kingston Road. Raced along, got a spot right in front of the store. Hobbled in with just my cane. There's somebody else on cash. And I said, I'm here to pick up this book. I'm illegally parked. Oh, yeah, it's right here. And then he cautioned me. He said, now, look, this one has got some markings, a little bit of highlighter in it. So it's $5. If you want a better copy with nothing written in it at all, I can probably find one. It'll be $10. And I said, no, thanks. I'll take this one, the $5 one, because the book I'm reading from now, The Awakening Your Life's Purpose, is just full of underlined, you know, ink and so on. And it doesn't matter because the people who read these books were smart enough to underline the good parts. So here I am sitting with two books by Eckhart Tolle, and on the cover of this one says, number one New York's bestseller, The Power of Now, A Guide to Spiritual Enlightenment. Over 2 million copies sold with a new preface by the author. And I'm not even going to open it. I'm not going to quote from it. I will come to this later. I have reading for my summer camping trips, these two books. But I have the feeling that the one that I got, The Awakening to Your Life's, with all this bit about the ego and how it controls you, may in fact be the one that's more helpful than The Power of Now. Because I know The Power of Now. I mean, I know I'll find goodies in there and so on, but I'm going to read something from the role playing section. This is again, I'm trying to get back. Ken. Calm down. I know you're excited. You've been racing along Kingston Road, racing back, wanting to get back into this, but just calm down, collect your thoughts, speak clearly Speak calmly. Say what it is you want to say. Don't just have a mush of words flying out of your mouth all at once. Okay. Did you hear that? I did. Yeah. So what I'm talking about, what I'm excited about, is this realization, this understanding I seem to have now of how false this construct of Ken Bowl is. This thing we build, this thing that dominates our lives in every waking hour, that controls us. And it's once you are aware of that, oh, why did I say that? Well, because that made me feel better than this person or whatever, or I did this in comparison, or I did this to, like I just said about the men's group thing and so on. That's coming out of a need, some insecurity and this ego, this thing that, you know, we sometimes call personality, this persona, is a thing that's made up of words and thoughts and ideas and our histories and our pasts and our learned experiences and our time in school and everything that's been our history up until now. But in fact, it is governed by these needs. And there's a quote here that may explain that. And this is in the section on role playing. And we play these roles of teacher or wise man or stoner or, you know, whatever, father, parent. All these different roles that we take on in our lives that we've constructed because that's how we hold ourselves together. And it says here, why does the ego play roles? Because of one's unexamined assumption, one fundamental error, one unconscious thought. And that thought is, I am not enough. Okay? When you have that thought, I am not enough, that makes you take on these roles and play these roles. Other unconscious thoughts follow. I need to play a role in order to get what I need to be fully myself, right? I need to get more so that I can be more. Now, an example I can give in real life, and I just, this came to me yesterday, was how much of my youth was spent wanting to define myself as a writer because I needed a role, I needed an all-encompassing persona to explain what it was I was doing with my life. And in particular, when I was working on the railway in Prince George, you know that story, this was sort of a summer job that was wild, banging in spikes on a railway gang out of Prince George heading up north. You know, this was exciting, but this was the material, this was the meat I needed to be a writer, like a Jack Kerouac type figure. But it's because I needed to have an identity to hold myself together, to justify why am I drifting? Why do I have this summer job? Why don't I have a plan for the future? Why aren't I married and settled down like some of my other friends who knew what to do right out of high school? So I constructed that. Okay, I'm a writer and I'm doing this job so that I have material to write about and experiences. Okay, because it echoes this thing I just read. I am not enough as I am, right? I need to play a role in order to get what I need to be fully myself. I need to get more so that I can be more. Now it goes from there. But you cannot be more than you are because underneath your physical and psychological form, you are one with life itself, one with being. Okay, now, that's a hard thing to digest. I'll try and stay calm here. Your true essence, this spirit that you are, is perfect as it is. It doesn't need these roles, these justifications, these personas, these roles. In form, you are and will always be inferior to some, superior to others. And this is the thing I go through with every new person I meet, with every situation I'm in. You know, how do I measure up in relation to that person? How do they measure up in relation to me? Right? Inform you are and will always be inferior to some, superior to others. In essence, your true essence, true inner self, that is you, you are neither inferior nor superior to anyone. True self-esteem and true humility arise out of that realization. In the eyes of the ego, self-esteem and humility are contradictory. In truth, they are one and the same. Self-esteem and humility are one and the same. Okay, so now I need to digest that. I've shared that with you, and you may just be rolling your eyes or whatever. You know, you've tuned out long ago, or maybe you're trying to grasp that too. Or maybe you're saying, hey, dude, I know that shit. How come you're just learning that now? And that makes you better than me, right? In that game of role-playing, fitting in where you are. And maybe by me reading this, I'm trying to say, hey, 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 look at me, I'm learning stuff. And that really, instead of me actually getting down to this essence, I'm just still playing the same game, buying these books by Eckhart Tolle. Yeah, oh, wow, look at the path I'm on, buddy. Yeah, I'm going somewhere, I'm doing something. So this is the battle I'm fighting, boys and girls, okay? And I really do want to have a genuine, for real battle with this ego that makes up who Ken Bowl is. I really do want to take on this monster. And whether I'll meet with any success or not, I don't know. And sometimes buying books is just maybe just another distraction, you know? Who knows? But I'm going to leave it at that. I'm going to leave it at that. I just had to add this piece on to the last piece because I find it so funny that as soon as I remember that, I race down and, ma'am, I come back with my goal, my mission. I got to have the power of now. I got the power now right beside me. Will it mean anything? Will it change me? Will you hear any difference? Will this help me as I come to the conclusion of episode 1000 and stop doing this fucking podcast? You know? Is this going to really help me on my journey? There's a part of me that thinks, yes, yes it is. That's just what you need. That's what you're working on. Is me switching from doing this oral podcast to doing a video, you know, flaunting all my toys, which of course will be an ego thing. Look what I got. Yeah, that's when I got that. That was this. This has this meaning to me. Will that actually help me on my journey, or will that just be another, you know, distraction, another game? Well, let's stay tuned and see. Scarborough Dude, really, you know, it may not sound like it. Oh, God, I've got another bookmark here. All right, let's just finish off with one more clip. The ego doesn't know what your only opportunity for being at peace. Oh, okay. It's about this section is just finding peace. And the ego doesn't know that your only opportunity for being at peace is now. This now. In this present moment. That moment that just passed. This moment now. This now. This is my only chance for peace. And of course, I'm not going to find it because I'm talking, I'm making words, I'm trying to explain something. If I just shut up, I might find that peace, as I do sometimes when I'm camping alone. Okay? There are three words that convey the secret of the art of living. The secret of all success and happiness. Okay, now, you want to know what those three words are, don't you? All right? There's three words that convey the secret of the art of living, the secret of all success and happiness. Now, do you want to hear what those three words are? I know I do. I'm going to read them. I'm going to tell you right now. I'm going to tell you what those three words are. But you have to be listening. You have to be paying attention. Come on, come on, come on. Listen up, listen up, listen up. Those three words are, and you might be disappointed. You know, I might tell them to, and you might say, oh, come on. Well, but that's it? That's the secret to happiness? Oh, come on, come on. That can't be right. Bullshit. You know, that might be your attitude. You might think this is just a trick. Well, I'm sorry, but I'm reading from Eckhart Tolle, and this is what he believes. He believes there are three words that convey the secret of the art of living, the secret of all success and happiness. And those three words are one with life. One with life. And I think I'll end on that spot. Just let you think about that a little bit, okay? You think about that. One with life. Hope you heard that. It wasn't too loud, but of course that's the Shane's bicycle bell. Yeah. Welcome to the last part of the Dixon James podcast number 998. It says I've got 19 minutes left. I set my timer. And there's a part of me thinking, Ken, I don't think you've got 19 minutes worth of words to share today. So we'll see how it goes. It is Saturday? No, it's Good Friday. It's Good Friday of the Easter weekend. I'm sitting right now in the sunshine. There's a lot of clouds, and as soon as they move past the line of sunlight, it gets chilly. But right now we've got full sunshine, and I'm sitting on a little bench beside the creek, which is sort of just below our house. It's a little park I've podcast from before. In fact, this very spot on this very bench. So this is my walk for today. Holiday everywhere. My wife and son are both at home. And yeah, we've got a weekend coming up, but I'm going to talk about that when the weekend comes up. Here's one. You don't live your life, but life lives you. Now, again, of course, this is another one by Tolle. I think I understand that part. I think I can get my head around that. But the following line was, life is the dancer, you are the dance. And that puzzles me, because I'm thinking it should be the other way around. Life is the dance, you are the dancer. But I went back to the book and double-checked that. So I'm puzzled by that one. Maybe I'll leave that with you. Maybe it's clear to you, and maybe you're not even listening. So you've had enough Tolle to last a lifetime. But believe me, it just resonates. Everything. It's I'm just surprised that at this late stage in my life, I'm finding something new, a new way of looking at things. And it is about this concept of the I've referred to my personality before, and you know, parts of it you're shaped and you're governed by. And he just uses the word ego, but that the ego is this thing that wants control of your life, and it stops you from being who you are, your essence, your true inner self, this life force. And that I get. And he goes on to say the ego just wants control, won't want to let go, doesn't want you to awaken to the truth, because it feeds itself. And it's, you know, I've many times in the past, before discovering this book, I've talked about how annoyed I am at myself sometimes for comparing myself in relation to somebody else, or, you know, all the talk in my head, the chatter, the fake arguments that I'll have, this busyness that you're consumed by, and that's this ego thing trying to maintain control of you and feed itself. It has needs. It needs to be reassured. And how often have I said that on this podcast? I'm looking for validity, that sense that yes, this makes sense. And I'm validated. That's the word. So it is a battle, but this reading this book, and of course I'm going to get into the following book or the earlier one, The Power of Now, is really giving me a leg up on confronting my own ego. Those words, those things that govern my day and my time and my outlook and my relationships, and is starting to, you know, allowing me to help put that in perspective, to sort of come down on it a little and say, hey, wait a minute. Park that. That isn't necessary. And, of course, all of this is in relation to being open to the present moment. The now, as I sit here in the sunshine and feel the warmth, you know, this grounding that our good friend Lil on Life reminded me about when I did that on a podcast a couple of episodes back. Here again on the ego, the extent of the ego's inability to recognize itself. It just doesn't want you to know or to come clean about itself. The extent of the ego's inability to recognize itself and see what it is doing is staggering and unbelievable. You know, how strong that force is. It will do exactly what it condemns others for, and not see it. So all the bad things you say about somebody else, you're doing that yourself, or this ego of you is doing that, and not being aware of it, not even aware. I mean, and most of us just carry on our lives unawakened and live by this voice in our head that sort of tells us do this and you'll get rewarded for this and that. So this has been, you know, this has been constant for the past few episodes and will continue to be for quite some time. But the other thing is, I just listened to a Sam Harris podcast, and you know I never miss him. And this was on free will. Now, he's done several on free will. This one was the clearest I've heard and made the most sense. And I found what was so fascinating about it was, I mean, how convincing they are in saying it's, you know, if you just follow through what we know about life and our cellular nature and you know, our atomic composition and so on, that everything sort of follows these laws of whatever, the laws that we don't know and don't understand, but lead to the conclusion. If you could go backwards, if you've taken an action, even my sitting here, and follow it backwards, everything makes sense. Everything follows from what was the action or choice or thought before it. And so it just inevitably, I'm going to be ending up sitting on this bench. There was nothing else. There was no place else I was going to be. Now, when I woke up this morning, I wasn't sure if I was going to go to Bluffers Park, Thompson Park, the Birkdale Ravine, or even Rosetta McLean Gardens. But I did know I was going to go to a park. And that choice to end up here guaranteed would appear to be a free choice. Oh, I'm going to go here today. But it was already determined by each previous moment, each previous thought, each previous feeling. And it ended up maybe one of the decision factors, well, my car's in the garage, so I'm probably going to use that. I could take Naoko's car, but then she might want it back, so it's probably better to walk. And if I'm going to walk, it's going to take me to this park. And so there's a logic to it, but there's other factors too about on so many other levels. How long is this walk is going to be? Which path am I going to take? When am I going to sit on the bench? When am I going to press start on this podcast? So anyway, I don't want to waste your time on that. You get it or you don't. But what the conclusion you have to come down to is, therefore, people who do wrong in life, people who do good in life, are not deserving of praise or pride, because it was inevitable that they were going to do it. They were born with certain genes, they had the benefit of a certain education because they were born in a certain family, and so it's almost as they had no choice but to become a brilliant cancer researcher or whatever. That path was already determined step by step by step from all the other previous factors. And similarly, for the guy who goes out with a gun, and they gave the example of the man who, I think it was in Maine, who got up in a clock tower and shot about 15 people dead. But he begged them, he left a note behind and said, when I'm dead, do a post-mortem and find out what has made me so angry and full of hate. As if he knew something was wrong, but he couldn't stop the urge to go out and just in this rage and kill people. And of course, when they did examine his brain, they found this huge, a cancerous growth or a tumor that was impacting a part of his brain, which made the change in his personality, which led him. So that was just, again, it was a factual. There was a reason. It wasn't that he was born evil. And the example that I found the most interesting was them saying, well, wind the clock back 300, 400, 500 years. Now, Sam and this fellow he was talking to are educated people of today, but wind back to a time when other people didn't have the benefit of the science education we have now. And if they were, for example, to meet somebody having an epileptic fit, the conclusion would be, well, they're possessed by the devil, and the only way to get rid of it is to torture them in horrific ways and then kill them to punish the devil, to get the devil out of them. Like, that was the logical conclusion of what to do, and it's horrific. And the same example they gave, lightning strikes a village and maybe hits the church roof or whatever, a fire starts. But somebody had seen an old woman going through the woods gathering herbs, therefore the witch caused this fire, tried to destroy our church, and so torture and burn that witch. And this was the thinking of the day. And the point being that in the future, people will look back now at how we've incarcerated, locked up, punished so many people for things they really had no choice in the matter. If you don't have free will, you're going to go out and steal this or beat that person, whatever. Now, other factors come into it. Oh, well, he did it because he got drunk and beat his wife. Yes, but why did he get drunk? Well, then you go back to his childhood and so on. Or his, there's a reason for everything. And the point where the conversation gets interesting is, but society demands punishment because of where we are in this state of our evolution. And this will tie in with Eckhart Tolle and being awakened. If we're awakened, we are going to have more enlightened ways of understanding these issues and treating these problems. And try and eliminate some of the social causes, that the social reasons that lead people to a life of crime and so on, of course. But the idea that there's a reason for people doing what they do. And unfortunately, in our culture, the majority of the people want to believe, no, we have to make examples of these people, lock them up, or worse, kill them, to deter other people from doing similar crimes and so on. And that's a very, very hard argument, and it might be, hundreds of years before we get to that point. The same way when we talk about eating animals, it's going to be a very long time before we stop feeding on pigs and cows and And the horrific things we do now as humans, we've just got a ways to go. Here's another quote, and it sort of ties in with this. I sincerely hope somebody is trying to follow along with this, because this is really important stuff. That what do we do? What is the point of punishing people if we're not going to rehab or try and understand or find out the reasons for what they've done? And if it's only to satisfy another primitive urge to even the score, an eye for an eye, or this is not progress. At the current evolutionary stage of humanity, violence is still not only all pervasive, but even on the increase, as the old ego consciousness, amplified by the collective pain body, intensifies prior to its inevitable demise. Now, that's a jump. We've gone from Harris and free will back to Eckhart Tolle. But the point is that we're at this stage. We are still evolving. The human species is still evolving. And we're still at that period, again, the parallel where we still punish people without trying to understand. That it's going to take a long while before we have enough people are awakened. We have a higher level of awareness. When crime will decrease, It sounds like I'm trying to convince my listeners to buy into all this. I guess maybe really the bigger point is just, it's good to think. It's good to challenge your own thinking. It's good to look at the status quo and think, can that possibly be right? It's good to question things. It's good to read. It's good to expose yourself to new ideas. That's the issue, whether or not you want to get into Eckhart Tolle and all this Zen-like stuff. That's up to you. But to that idea of free will is one that really is worth thinking about. And my God, I put out a tweet to it yesterday. You could easily, if you Google Sam Harris and find this latest issue on free will, it is honestly really, really interesting and worth listening to. How's our time? Well, we've only got a few minutes left. So I think that's about it. Here's a brighter note to end on, and this is from, I saw this a few days ago. The International Space Station was showing the scene where Americans are coming in to join the Russian crew. Now, we know on Earth right now with the fight over the Ukraine and the high tension between America and Russia, particularly through Putin, and how ugly this is getting and how dangerous it is for everyone. But to see them come in and greet each other in this weightless state in this big capsule out in space, that the scientists, the educated, the elite, the non-politicians, even though they are sometimes the ones who vote to pay the bills, are actually out doing something quite wonderful. And then when you see people discovering new species in, an insect found in amber from the time of the dinosaurs, and when you've got all these scientists and biologists and archaeologists and all these people of science. I always rave about the arts, yes, all the singers, thank you, Joni Mitchell, Leonard Cohen, Bob Dylan, but also all you scientists out there who have just done this amazing research and discoveries for the passion of it, for the interest, and share that knowledge in a collective way. How wonderful, how great could be the human race if it wasn't for our collective stupidity. I used an expression up there, the pain body, and I think you have to read more of Tolle to understand what he means by that. But we carry the burden of the past, and it's passed on from generation to generation. I know I am carrying something of World War II, some of the pain of World War II. I'm carrying it in me. I think this ties into my freaking out at the dentist office that I would have got from my father, and I'm quite sure there's a little bit of darkness in my younger son, Daniel, that he got from me, that it has been passed on, this collective pain that is shared, that does get into the DNA, that does get passed on. And there's another whole topic to explore, but of course we don't have time for that right now because we're right almost at that 19-minute mark. So this is Scarborough, dude. Wind is picking up. I got to continue my walk, get a few more steps in. But I'll be back with more. We're not at 1,000 yet. We still got a few episodes to go. So stay tuned, and best wishes, and use your brain. Exercise that brain, right? Learn something new. And get in touch. Jesus, it's easy to contact the Scarborough Dude. DixonChains@gmail.com. Scarborough Dude signing out. Bye for now.